A medical student at a prestigious university in Shanghai stood second trial on Monday, 10 months after being sentenced to death for murdering his roommate with poison in April of last year. Lin Senhao, a postgraduate from Fudan University, denied intentional homicide charges during the trial held at Shanghai Higher People's Court. The headline trial lasted for over 13 hours and ended on late Monday night. The court will announce a verdict soon. 复旦投毒案昨日二审至深夜，双方在关键问题上展开激辩。被告人林森浩辩供称，我在投毒后对水进行了稀释，而控辩双方也围绕死因、动机和证据三个焦点激辩13个小时。 Obviously, a lot of attention has been paid to this case since it happened, but basically the question is, should he die for what he did, which was the result of the first trial?
Yeah, I don't think it's a question I can answer here, and I just like to say up front that the information we have here is secondhand, and this is our effort to try our best to see what we think happened. And I think for what the information that we've got so far, it just seems like, first of all, we see a dramatic turn of what the defendant admits what he's done, because now he's saying that it was a prank. So, but what kind of prank is that when this is a chemical student who has written papers on knowing the fact that it is a deadly compound that he's put in the water dispenser in the dormitory, which he knew that the other student was going to take water from. And I just don't really think that this is very believable in that sense.
Well, I mean, to be honest, I mean, a lot of the story, I think the relevant points of Huang's story has not really changed. In both trials, he admitted to adding the chemical to their water dispenser. In both cases, he said that it was meant to be a prank, that for April Fools, that he never did, in fact, intend to seriously injure or, as we can now see, end up killing his roommate. So I think in that sense, you know, again, not that much has changed. Rather, the defense is trying to offer mitigating factors, really, I think really just to convince the judge that there is enough doubt as to the evidence, there is enough doubt, there is enough counter evidence as to the cause of death that would warrant at least the death sentence being overturned.
Yes, and now I think there's other useful information that surfaced is that, well, as we see that the student Huang Yang, who's passed away, didn't die directly from the chemical compound that he took with the water, but
according to the defense.
According to the defense, yes. And no direct link can be established there, but he did die from liver failure and multiple organ failure. So, but still, it is the chemical compound that induced the failure of organs that happened later.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, in so many ways, I think the actual physical evidence that we've seen so far has been amazingly contradictory, that it is actually difficult to draw, I think, any solid conclusions or, you know, any conclusions beyond a reasonable doubt that this was, in fact, what killed Huang. I mean, again, the only real thing that we have linking Lin to Huang's death is the confession. As to evidence of whether or not this NDMA, which is the toxic chemical, number one, was in the water, we don't have any evidence saying that. We have contradictory evidence about whether NDMA was actually in Huang's urine or bodily tissues at the time of death or after the time of death. And now, again, we have evidence coming from the defense that it was, in fact, the hepatitis B virus that ended up killing Huang. And so, again, I mean, I would hate to be the judge in this case, obviously, because you're dealing with the case again, and so you kind of have to second-guess what someone else has said before you. But also, I think that it's just very, very different. What we see from both sides is compelling, in fact. And so the only evidence that we have really is circumstantial. And so in that sense, we shouldn't even be considering the death penalty unless we have solid physical evidence, you know, completely verifiable, you know, completely non-contradictory. Only then, I think, can we consider the death penalty.
Right. At least this is the case in the U.S., you know, the legal practice. You know, reasonable doubt, you just mentioned it. I think the defense has a lot of reasonable doubts. And they have tried to offer a lot of what can be considered reasonable doubts, such as, like John said, whether there are this toxic chemical in NDMA.
Yeah.
I was trying to say NDRC, but then no. Definitely no. NDMA in the water, or whether it's found in the urine. Apparently, there were two contradictory reports about the urine test. But all we know, it seems to be from the confession that Lin himself said he did put the chemical in the water dispenser.
And also you have to remember the circumstances of his arrest in the first place. The timeline that we've been given, I mean, again, as Hyeong mentioned, a lot of this is going to be secondhand reporting. I mean, it's as accurate as we think it is, right? We think it's accurate, but we're not completely sure. The timeline that we've been given says that one of the reasons he was, in fact, arrested and one of the initial suspects is because he visited the hospital. In fact, Lin even gave Huang an ultrasound examination of the liver, determined that there was no problems, didn't have to go to the hospital. A couple days later, Huang went to the hospital because he was suffering some severe complications, and Lin apparently went there to go visit him. And that's one of the reasons that he became one of the main suspects.
And also, I think it's relevant to discuss whether Lin did this intentionally or not. And because, according to his confession, yes, he did all these things, knowing the result to it. And also, he's studied this chemical matter in detail. And it'd be very difficult to argue that he didn't know what kind of deathly results it would induce. And also, what's really striking and very scary to me was that he actually gave the ultrasound to the dead student now. And also, he met this dead student's parents when they came to visit the student in the hospital, and Lin said nothing about.
Yeah. And when doctors were trying to, find out what led to Huang's, complication, he didn't say anything. While all his fellow students were trying to determine what were the chemical in his body, he didn't say a word.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is all, very, very damning. Information that we have here. I think that to say that, number one, that he intended to kill Huang is a difficult statement to back up. He himself has said that he did not mean to do it. I think there are good reasons to doubt that this was in fact unintentional. But I think if we see his behavior afterwards, I mean, only a completely cold-blooded killer would, administer an ultrasound, would stay at the hospital, would meet the parents. I mean, unless we're talking about a complete sociopath that has no emotion, that has no ability to feel empathy or emotions, and we have no evidence of that, then it's hard to say. I mean, again, we're looking at contradictory information, I think, about whether or not he even meant to do it. Yeah. It meant to kill Huang in the end.
Right.
Yeah.
Again, I think we also need to talk about the public sentiment around this case, apart from the case itself. Even though the law should always stand, aloof of all these public sentiments or outcries, but it's worthy to talk about it. So this seemed to be contradictory as well, because it seems some students wrote a petition letter actually asking for leniency on Lin, while there are others, including, of course, the parents of the victim, that insists that he should be sentenced to death. And there were also students trying to help out the police by collecting all kinds of evidence when the case was first discovered. So do you think that all these public sentiments will eventually have some effect on the, eventual verdict?
Well, I think here I can understand why more than 170 students from Fudan University, they signed a petition pleading for leniency for Lin. And I think this comes from, it's sort of in line with what the academic circle's attitude is with the death penalty in general, that we should avoid it. But I think when you look at the general public attitude when it comes to something that could be murder, so intentionally killing another person, I think the overwhelming majority of Chinese people still believe that it's an eye to an eye, tooth to a tooth, the old-fashioned way of punishing violence with violence.
The problem is, of course, with that viewpoint is it's incredibly simplistic, and it presupposes absolute knowledge of everything that happened, and it presupposes absolute knowledge of, you know, the defendant's state of mind and their thinking and motivation. It really, you know, having this eye for an eye type of idea really does not allow for what should occur in a modern legal system, which is, you know, what do the facts say? And again, I mean, personally speaking, you know, philosophically, I am not against the death penalty. I think that there have been cases where the death penalty is completely and wholly justified. I mean, because we see a completely unrepentant, cold-blooded, sociopathic killer who is never going to change from that. However, I think in China, in the U.S., in places where the death penalty is still used and overused, too often are people are committed to death, the state kills them, even though the evidence is not compelling. It is not airtight, you might say. And so, and especially in this case, yeah, I mean, from the perspective of the family, man, this is, it's a horrible tragedy. I think for everyone involved. I mean, imagine what the parents of Lin are going through, not just the parents of Huang. But at the same time, I mean, you know, I think we have to take a step back for a second and take a look. What kind of society do we want? Do we want a society that allows and, you know, encourages the state to kill people when there really isn't solid proof?
Yeah, I think it's a very compelling argument. Compassion is one thing, where who you support and whether you believe whether he is a killer is one thing, but whether or not we want retribution to be executed in such a way is another.
It's a bit different.
Yeah, it's a bit different. But it seems that from our WeChat forum, there are still more doubts on the defendant than support or compassion. For example, Yue Er says, most probably this reversal was taught by lawyers, but there may be some mitigating factors. For example, professional doctor witness did say that Huang died of some sort of hepatitis B instead of directly from poison. Then that should be another case.
But also, I just want to direct to that comment right there. I mean, I think just because the story is different or the statements made are different doesn't necessarily make them less true.
Of course.
Right? And so I think that's what we have to keep in mind. That's what makes these types of things very difficult is, well, how do you stack up previous statements with current statements?
Exactly. That's also true. But you are also talked about repentance because, you know, Li had written a public letter, has done things that show that he was repentant. But you are says if he did felt any regret for Huang, then he had half a month of time to tell the truth, you know, before Huang died, I think, and hospitalized.
Well, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, and I just think that with the death penalty, of course, there's the argument for or against, you know, whether it can act as a deterrent. And there has been some studies saying, no, it can't really. But still, I think our authorities believe that it can have some sort of effect deterring people from committing crimes. And further, it's about punishment. So, I mean, should something so cruelly done to another human being be punished in the same way? I think that is a very philosophical question that I guess you and I will have different answers.
Exactly. And also about the influence of public sentiments on the trial, because it seems that, especially in China, it seems that public opinion is being taken into account in many circumstances.
Which is a shame. It's a shame.
Yeah, which is a shame. And you hear in the verdict words such as, this case has aroused public indignation. You know, who cares if the law is the law?
Well, but unfortunately, we don't live in a country that lives completely by the law. And I don't think any country, even with, you know, very developed and standardized legal systems, you know, live in a vacuum somehow where the law is the only thing that's ever always followed. But also, I mean, looking at, you know, the comments again about, you know, oh, he had so much time. I mean, haven't you ever, as a child especially, I mean, I can't think of any specific examples, but I know it's happened to me, where as a kid, perhaps even as a teenager, you do something, you make a mistake, and you feel really, really bad about it. But partly because you feel bad, partly because you don't want to be embarrassed or get in trouble, you don't say anything, hoping that it'll all blow over. I mean, so in that sense, I think we do need to, you know, have a bit of, sort of, bit of empathy when this does happen, because just because someone doesn't come forward automatically doesn't mean that they did it or that they did it on purpose, right?
Yeah, but I just think that your actions resulting in the death of another person is a very different thing to compare with maybe you
breaking a vase or something like
that. So yes, I understand what you're saying, John, but when it comes to this kind of case, I still think we need to be like more strict when it comes to this kind of thing.
Right.